This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by one of the brightest people I get to speak to regularly, with Matt Wolf, a leader at RSM. He leads the valuation practice, but is a brilliantly insightful person around private equity and a whole host of subjects. Matt, why don't you take a moment to introduce yourself? Then I want to ask you, what are the core trends you're watching right now in private equity, and what's the temperature of the market? Matt, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me. Happy to introduce myself. My name is Matt Wolf. I'm a director at RSM's consulting practice. I lead the healthcare valuation team and our healthcare private equity team. And I'm also one of our senior analysts. So I focus a lot on what's going on in the economy, what's going on in my industry, healthcare, and others to a degree, and then private equity in general. And right now, what the kind of main trends that we're watching would be inflation, certainly, and interest rates. What does that look like going forward, especially in the wake of the FOMC meeting yesterday? COVID-19, right, the uncertainty that continues to cast on markets and the economy, and certainly the human tragedy therein. And public versus private equity markets and the real economy, what does growth look like? Where are the disconnects? Where are the opportunities? It's kind of what we're looking at right now, Scott.
And thank you. And there, you know, I was with somebody last night who was saying, if a private equity fund buys in this market, they're not going to do that well, so they shouldn't be buying. But that's not really a choice, because private equity funds, this is their business. This is what they do. What is your sense of watching the private equity world today? How are you watching it, and what are the big trends you're watching?
Yeah, I think you know, it's important to remember too that the public equity markets do not equal the economy. You know, the public equity markets have been off to a really rough start in 2022, as we all know. But that alone doesn't mean there aren't opportunities to invest in the private market. You know, there are certainly headwinds. I mentioned inflation earlier. Inflation, that's affecting different sectors differently. Of course, we're seeing a lot of volatility and increases in energy costs. That affects different sectors differently. I'm not suggesting that there aren't headwinds, but if you kind of move below the headlines, below a lot of the financial news doom and gloom that we've been reading about for the past few weeks or months, there are still opportunities to create value, to consolidate businesses, to bring expertise to kind of underutilized, underserved subsectors. So there's, you know, there's still opportunities there. I was actually kind of talking and sort of half joking with one sponsor the other day who said, well, you know, we have an easier benchmark in 2022 with the way that the markets are going. So maybe a little reason for optimism too, but still certainly some buying opportunities.
But that's really it. The point that you make is fascinating. Because quite frankly, last year the S&P returned 27%. And so if you're an investor in a private equity fund, and this isn't changing anyway, so the big institutional investors, they know in the long run there ought to be some alpha or some difference between the private equity investment markets. They at least think so.
Absolutely.
But you know, but certainly, when the public markets turn 27%, it's certainly hard to consistently beat that number. But what happens is, in a down year for the public markets, the private equity funds are able to manage timing really well. So almost always in a down year for the public markets, the private equity funds can outperform. That's not necessarily real outperformance. That could often be timing outperformance. But there is this concept, jokingly, of, well, we could beat the indexes when they're not doing well, because you often can, because you can manage things a lot better and it looks a lot better. And that's a different issue than truly beating the markets. But we look at this issue of...
Oh, no, the only other thing I was going to say, Scott, too, is that, you know, the timing, I think, is such a great point that they're, you know, we talk about people who are pushing off exits. They're just going to collect some additional cash in the meantime. You know, the one thing that I do wonder about, though, is, you know, going into the pandemic, the big topic that we're all talking about was the future of 2 and 20 and these managed management fee structures. What does that look like? And then the pandemic hit. Everybody was making deals. Everybody was making money. And it was a much kind of gentler environment. But if we move into a more turbulent, tumultuous environment, does that conversation resurface? And what might the future of that be as these private equity firms kind of evaluate their relationships with investors? And some investors look to just start doing more of their own deals themselves without utilizing firms in the same way.
Yes, but I think at the end of the day, the 2 in 20 is here for a long time, because those funds that are doing well are so oversubscribed. They have too many people wanting to give them money that, at least for the higher stature funds, they've got too much. They've got more money being put in than they want as it is, quite frankly. Like, I can't tell you the amount of places that you hear were oversubscribed. If they're oversubscribed, they're certainly not going to give up the 2 in 20. If the deal making around 2 in 20 would be done by firms, it's like the oldest thing in the world, like a Groucho Marx concept of any club that wants me must not be a good club. And I wonder with the private equity funds and the VC funds, those that could charge the 2 in 20, some of the VCs are even more aggressive. As long as they're oversubscribed, there's so much funds flowing towards them, and pension funds over the last year or two have been increasing their allocations. I mean, CalPERS is a great example that moved another 5% of their $500 billion towards private equity. There's just a lot of money flowing to private equity still. I guess the great challenge would be, right, if you're trying to time exits, and many funds do for a million different reasons, do you end up taking your company out to market at a time when multiples are lower, and what does the market look like? But no, fascinating situations. And let me ask you this question, Matt, because you see this, front and center. Last year, the market, fourth quarter was busier than it's ever been for advisory firms, private equity funds, law firms, anybody who's working in that ecosystem. What's the temperature of the market today as we get into the end of the first quarter this year?
It's still, deal flow activity is still elevated. I don't know that, multiples have come down generally across the board. So I think if we look at kind of the total capital invested, we'll likely, once the quarter closes and we get our data in from our providers, we'll likely see, in general, capital invested declined over, especially over Q1 of 2021. But I think that the deal count will be pretty strong, right? We'll probably see average deal size decrease, but we're not going to see the same kind of decline in deal count that we'll see in capital invested. People are still very busy, right? We talk to bankers, we talk to sponsors, our own firm. I mean, we're still kind of at or over capacity in terms of just the deal flow that we can get through. So I think we're going to see maybe those investment amounts come down, the multiples certainly come down, but the volume of deals will remain fairly strong.
Absolutely fascinating. Matt, anything else that's on your mind that you'd like to share today about what you're watching in the private equity environment?
Yeah, I think the other kind of broad topic would be around COVID, right? We're talking about moving from more of a pandemic to an endemic. What does that look like? I think, not only were people kind of optimistic about it as we work to curb the kind of deaths and sickness from it with new antivirals and better access to vaccines and more vaccines available. And then you're seeing, what's happening in Shenzhen and Hong Kong and some other cities around kind of the Asia Pacific region with the spikes in case counts. And, I think people are wondering, are we going into another wave? What does that mean for the global economy? We still haven't really recovered in terms of shipping infrastructure and logistics, and that's become even more strained because of other geopolitical events going on. So, what does that mean for investing and for business in general for the next 12 months? And we don't know enough yet. We only know that it just will be more uncertainty, when we were all kind of hoping for maybe at least one of these giant global events to kind of fall off the our notice, but it's coming back to the forefront, creating uncertainty that we're all just working to navigate.
I mean, 100%. No, just absolutely fascinating. Yes. And let's hope that this, what we see in Shenzhen, we see in the Asia Pacific, you know, does not end up being another piece of the pandemic that swirls around the globe and puts us back into shutdowns and problems and all kinds of stuff. We're just into a very scary situation. Oh my goodness. Nobody's has the stomach for that. So let's hope not.
You're absolutely right. Well, and that's, I think, another kind of concern too, is if that is the right thing to do. I think people are just kind of done with it. And so what does that mean even, right? Do people have the will to do it again? And if they don't, what does that mean for kind of not only public health, but then the global and domestic business environment?
100%. Let's hope we're not heading in that direction. Most of us are just so exhausted from that. Let's hope not. In any way, Matt, what a daunting and fascinating year. At least things keep on ticking along. So thank goodness for that. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Always a pleasure to visit with Matt Wolf. Matt's a magnificent leader and brilliant thinker. Hopefully next week we'll get a chance to talk to you again about leadership and priorities for this year and what you're looking at. Thank you very much.
That sounds great, Scott. Thank you.